Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Good evening. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here, News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. Before we get to anything, kill the music. This is important. I'm keeping Chris Chandler in the news booth. Chris, what do you think?
Oh, my God. Nerd heaven. We're going to finally be able to pretend like those last three movies never happened. We're going to have a real Star Wars flick here.
The first 20 seconds of that trailer with the Star Destroyer crash, that was more than the first three movies combined.
It made me want to cry. I'm proud to admit right here, except I told John Lewis, that makes me want to cry. And he said, why? Because we're old?
So Christy was in the kitchen cooking bacon earlier. I was you have to come in here immediately. You have to come see this. I made my wife burn her hands hurrying to get bacon out of the fryer so that she could come see this. She was not nearly as impressed with me, but holy cow.
I'm right with you.
And did you notice they're using men in suits instead of CGI?
Is that true? Yes. No, yeah?
Yeah, they're using actual people in stormtrooper suits because J.J. Abrams said it just didn't look real in the first three.
I find that admirable. The Millennium Falcon, there it was, flying again.
I know. Oh, okay, I'll let you go. I got to go take a cold shower now. Oh, my goodness, the Star Wars trailer. It's wow. I called the whole family in, and I told them it was extremely urgent. It was extremely important. Yeah, they had to come in. They had to see it. Is it hot in here? I'm excited. Oh my goodness gracious. The Star Wars trailer. It was fantastic. You've got to see it. I mean, the first 10 seconds, the visual of the first 10 seconds of a trailer was better than all three of the first movies combined. And then there's the Millennium Falcon, and then there's R2-D2, and then there's Luke Skywalker's voice. Clearly, he's had a kid. And then Han Solo and Chewie at the end. I'm ecstatic. Christmas this year. Yes, listen. I need a cigarette now. Okay. I'm sorry. It made my day. And so apparently, they're going to show it on the big screen, and it's going to be an IMAX. Yes. It's going to be an IMAX, people. I know you all wanted to know these things. It's a big deal. It made my day. Go check it out. It's fantastic. It is. I mean, the first 20 seconds when you see that Star Destroyer buried on with sand. Oh, okay. That's enough. I now must go to Doug Turnbull and let him check traffic on, I bet, 285. There's no Star Destroyer crash.
Eric, it's just soaked right now, and it's jammed all over the city at 512 on WSB. Let's start with the outer loop, 285 west and southbound. Delays pouring over for Peachtree Industrial Boulevard, just solid counterclockwise all the way around I-20 on the west side. More slow stuff between Flat Shoals and I-20. The inner loop is slowest, 285 north for Paces Ferry to 75. Actually, equally as slow, 285 east and southbound through DeKalb from Georgia 400 around past Highway 78, headlights on in the rain. It's going to be a long drive, Eric.
All right. I am looking at the radar, folks, and you actually, this is an important one. Heavy, heavy, heavy rain headed at this very moment into Hampton, Lovejoy, Jonesboro, Forest Park, Stockbridge is going to get it. McDonough is going to get it. It's going to be going across 75 on the south side. Also into the, come on, Chris Chavon, I can't say that on the air. I would, because you're absolutely right. Chris, I got this email that I'm underselling the trailer. Yes, I am underselling the trailer, but I can't use those words on air. It's about to get really, really nasty right over the connector, folks. In the next 10 minutes, the rain is just going to pour over. And there's more coming in from Alabama. Yes, it's going to rain over the connector because of the Star Wars trailer. It is. I'm totally distracted. I sat down last. Oh, and the picture of Darth Vader's helmet with the skull. Okay. We'll move on now. Jared is looking at me oddly. I can do this. In other news, I guess you need the phone number, don't you? 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. By the way, Shivani, I know you're listening. We need like a WSB night at the movies. we can go over to Atlantic Station and go to Yard House and grab a few beers and go to the movie. Yes, I think we should. I mean, forget the listeners. This will be like internal Bondi night here. We'll make the pig farmer buy our tickets even. Okay, now, I have news we need to get into. The 6th Congressional District here in Georgia. That would be Tom Price's district. It is North Metro Atlanta, excluding Buckhead. They carved a little hook into Barry Loudermilk's district. Used to be Phil Gingrich's district into Buckhead. But North Metro Atlanta, Tom Price's district. The district conventions for the Republican Party are coming up. And each district has been presented with a resolution that would call on the Republican Party in Georgia to pass the religious freedom legislation. Every district has gotten it. The district conventions are coming up. It will be a chance for Republicans in the state to show what they want. It will be a chance for Republicans in the state. The Democrats will do it too, but the Republicans will be able to cast their voice, make their voice heard to the Republican Party, saying, we as Republicans, we as your base, we as your grassroots want you to do this or not. They will get a chance to vote on the resolution to say that we in Georgia believe that our religious liberty should be on par with the same legal standing as our free speech and freedom of assembly rights. Freedom of assembly and freedom of speech in Georgia require a compelling governmental interest to curtail them. And all this law does is say that we should also ensure that our religious liberty, if it is to be curtailed by the state, since it is in the First Amendment with the right of assembly and with the right of free speech, and the press, by the way, compelling governmental interest there as well, that religion should also be compelling governmental interest. That should be the standard if the state wants to curtail it. Every district in Georgia is getting this resolution. The 6th District's resolution committee has killed it. If you go to the district convention for the 6th District in Georgia, again, that's Tom Price's district. If you're a Republican in Tom Price's district and you go to your district convention, you will be denied your right to share your opinion on religious liberty. You will be denied. The resolutions committee, three people, I'm told, have said, we don't want this. We don't want our people. We don't want our district. We don't want the Republican grassroots to dare have their say on this. It was shut down by people who don't want to cause problems for members of our legislature to show how far away from the base they are. Is it not insane that Republicans in Georgia would run away from religious liberty? That's what they're doing. They're running away from it. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. They're running away from it. Those of you who are going to the 6th District Convention, you remember that your resolutions committee has said no way, no how. We don't want these people daring to vote in favor of religious liberty, so we're not letting it go to the floor. Just insane. By the way, for those of you going to the 6th District Convention, learn your Robert's Rules of Order. You can force the committee to surrender the resolution to the floor for a vote. And if the chair says you're out of order, appeal the ruling of the chair, and a two-thirds vote overrides the ruling of the chair. I mean, just you guys, you've got to learn your Robert's Rules of Order to override what these people are trying to do. If you're just tuning in, all the districts in Georgia meet for the Democrats and the Republicans. You have district conventions. You have county conventions where you pick the people who will then go to the districts. And at the districts, you pick the people who go to a state convention where you pick your state officers. Each district will meet. It's coming up. Is it this weekend? I can't remember. I think it might be this weekend. I can't remember. Anyway, so the 6th district, all of them have copies of a resolution calling on the state government to pass the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. In the 6th district, the resolution committee, according to several notes I received on Facebook today by people who will be going to the district convention, the resolutions committee has killed the resolution, said it can't come forward. So what you guys need to do on the floor of the convention is just make a motion to bring up the resolution to the floor. You can do it. Robert's rules let you do it. Don't let them tell you they can't do it. And if the chair says you're out of order, just appeal the ruling of the chair. Make it difficult for them. If they're going to make it difficult for you, it's your party. Take charge of your party. Take charge of your district. Kudos to Tanya Diddy, among others, for putting it out there, letting people know that this is going on. So that people, it's so frustrating the way leadership in the party is bullying people. Really, really just amazing. Okay, I got a ton of other stuff I got to talk about tonight as well. Hillary Clinton. Maybe her campaign is just being subtly honest with us. Her campaign was caught parking in a handicap spot. That's right. They parked her van in a handicap spot. Oh, and by the way, you know she didn't tip the staff at Chipotle. Not that Chipotle requires you to tip people at Chipotle, but, you know, again, I use the would Mitt Romney get mess for this from the media. Yes, if Mitt Romney did not tip the staff at Chipotle, he would get all sorts of flack for the media. Hillary Clinton didn't. And then she parked in a handicap spot. Oh, but then there's something else the most transparent campaign ever has done. I'll tell you what it is when we come back. You can also call in 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Yeah, I thought the CGI was bad too. I'm sorry, we're still discussing Star Wars here off the air. So, you know, if you get on iTunes, you can get all 6 of the Star Warses, and I worked very, very, very hard to never let my 6-year-old know that the first 3 existed until kids at school started talking about them. And so I had to let him at least see the first one. And we've seen bits and pieces of the second, third. I won't let him watch them all because they get kind of violent and scary in some parts. You know, the second one, Attack of the Clones, is PG-13. But so I got them, and I bought for... Y'all are going to learn a little more about me than you probably wanted to know. I work all the time. And at night when the kids are in bed and Christy is in her sewing room, I just want to kill people. I mean, not physically kill people. I got an Xbox One. It was a friend of mine. His advice was to get an Xbox One and Rise of Rome. It's this game where you're a Roman soldier and you just slaughter people. It's awesome. It's very cathartic as well. I can pretend it's people I've dealt with through the week as I'm gutting them. But nonetheless... So I had a small TV. I got a bigger TV. I got a 75-inch TV. And so I got the Star Warses, and I pulled up the second one because the kid wanted to watch part of it. And I wanted to show him the scene with Yoda fighting what's-his-name. And Count what's-his-name? Count Dooku, yes. Count Poopoo, yes. And it was fake. I mean, not only was it stiffly acted and horrible dialogue. I mean, George Lucas's dialogue, you know, it was Harrison Ford who said, George, you can write this blankety blank, but you sure can't say it. The CGI was fake. I mean, it was clearly fake. The models they used in episodes 4, 5, and 6 on my HDTV look real, and the CGI does not. And it really disappointed. That was one of the cool things about the original Star Wars. The very first film I ever saw in the theater, by the way. I kid you not. My parents took me. It had come back out again. It came out in 76, and then it came out in 79 again when I was 4. And they had a friend of theirs from Germany, and he was raving about it. So we all went to see it. He said it would be fine for a 4-year-old to see. Blew my 4-year-old mind away. I've been addicted ever since. And it looked real. The effects looked real. The ships looked real. They weren't CGI. And so J.J. Abrams apparently has decided to go back to the real stuff and make it look real again. Real soldiers, none of the CGI soldiers. Real puppets, not a CGI Yoda. Not that Yoda's going to be in this. I think that's a big deal. All right. And by the way, so Charlie tells me that callers are a particular kind of stupid tonight. Doesn't surprise me, given the weather. I mean, you got all the Obama phone people are inside tonight giving us calls. You got heavy rain going into Stockbridge right now. Heavy rain going into Irondale, leaving Fayetteville. You're almost in the clear of Fayetteville. But another band of strong, strong stuff is crossing the Alabama line. About as pungent as an Alabama fan after a loss to Auburn. Bremen, Villarica, Douglasville, Dallas, Cartersville, Acworth, Kennesaw. You're all going to get some heavy, heavy rain here in the next 20 minutes for some of you. Now, before I go to anything else, I need to tell you one more thing. Have you heard of Chris Paranto? Chris Paranto was one of the contractors for the CIA in Benghazi. He wrote a book called 13 Hours. He and I, we've been following each other on Twitter for a while. And he wrote this book, and I talked to him the other day. We had a conversation, an interview, where I talked to him about his book, about how he feels about Hillary Clinton, all of that. If you go to our SoundCloud account, EW Erickson, you can find it. We will attach it as well to the podcast of this show tonight, and you can get it. I'm going to play some clips because it relates to a Hillary Clinton story I want to talk about after I go to Doug Turnbull.
There you go, at 543 WSB, and right now we see a lot of delays in the perimeter area because of that rain you've been talking about. 285 northbound, the interloop is slow between MLK and I-20, between South Cobb and 75, east and south, between Georgia 400 and about Highway 78, some more slow spots down past Memorial. Outer loop backups, 285 north at the right lanes from La Vista up to 85, west and southbound, just stacked from Peachtree Industrial Boulevard all the way around to I-20 on the west side, Eric.
Martha Zoller says she doesn't have any idea what I'm talking about. It's a guy thing. No. It's like a humanity thing. All of humanity should embrace Star Wars. You really should. It brings, it's like Coke. It brings, not cocaine, Coca-Cola. It brings people together. But I want to buy the world a ticket to Star Wars. Okay. I got to move into more real stuff. I'm sorry. Chris Paranto, we talked last night. Listen to him here.
We are going to continue to speak out and continue to keep putting out the true narrative, whether they like it or not. They can come, and as you can see, they continually have inconsistencies with their stories. Our story has stayed consistent. So I think that legitimizes, well, I don't think it does legitimize what we're saying, and it delegitimizes what they're saying.
This is about Benghazi. You know, the Congress, the House, put out a report. Turns out that Mike Rogers, the congressman who put out the report saying there was nothing wrong, the State Department did everything fine, his wife was getting a State Department contract. Bet you didn't know that. Wasn't reported by the media. His wife wound up getting the contract after Rogers puts out the report. And now you got the situation with Hillary Clinton, where she's banning cell phones and cameras before meetings with her. On Thursday, her motorcade left the Spring Hill Suites from Main Street Cafe, where she met privately with party leaders for an hour and a half. The meeting was so private, everyone had to hand over cell phones and cameras before taking part. She's controlling that much access. She's controlling all of that. So much for a transparent, open campaign. And she was involved in the Benghazi mess. Paranto and I, we talked about that as well. We talked about Hillary's role, and he was very straightforward. She was the Secretary of State at the time. The calls came from the Secretary of State that she was in charge of. She blamed it on a video. She believed it was a YouTube video, not an attack. And he and his fellow soldiers who were there to defend the embassy and were given a stand-down order so that they couldn't engage the bad guys, they're out there and they're not going to let it go away. They're going to tell the truth. You can go to our SoundCloud account at EW Erickson to hear the interview or get tonight's podcast of this show. It'll be at the end of it. If you go to ericontheradio.com, ericontheradio.com. Sign up for the show notes. There will be a link in tonight's email to the interview with Chris Paranto. It was a very fascinating subject. We spent some time talking about the book and a lot of time talking about what happened and a good bit of time on why he's doing what he's doing. He could be doing other things, but he feels convicted that the story needs to be told and the people in charge are lying about it to protect themselves. Listen to the interview.
The onus falls on the State Department because it was a State Department op, and they had the responsibility to protect the ambassador. We just happened to be in the right place at the right time to attempt to save the ambassador and the State Department guys. But again, if we hadn't been there, I believe you'd probably been cleaning up 30 bodies instead of just two.
That was Chris Paranto. I talked to him the other day. You can go to ericontheradio.com, find the link to my interview. It'll be included in the podcast for those of you who get the podcast of the show on iTunes or SoundCloud or WSBRadio.com. It'll be there as well. He was one of the security contractors in Benghazi, and he told what happened on the ground there, which, you know, there are a number of people in the media and in Washington who just flat out did not care what happened. They called it a Republican witch hunt. All he wanted was the truth. He wanted people to know the truth. You can go listen to the interview at ericontheradio.com. It was a great, great conversation with him. Very, very nice guy, by the way. Really a good guy. Enjoyed it tremendously. He is out regularly giving speeches. He's got a wife and kids. And I did ask him, why are you out doing this? Why are you giving up time with your family? And he was very frank that there were people who died in Benghazi in part, not solely because, but in part because of a stand down order he and his colleagues were given. That stand down order, it didn't come from the State Department specifically. It was given to them by the head of the Benghazi station. But it came, and who did it come? It wasn't the station chief who gave it. Someone gave it to the state to the station chief from the State Department. And he thinks that story needs to be told. You can go listen to the interview. When we come back, shifting gears, free-range children. Have you heard of this phenomenon, free-range children? Like free-range chicken, except, well, you don't cook them, unless you're in Hansel and Gretel. We'll be back. Yep. There you go. I'm not disappointed. I would rather that teaser, and it's not even the full trailer, it's just the teaser. I would rather that teaser than the first three movies combined. It is. It really is. Yes, it is. And you know, somebody here in Atlanta the other day got snippy with me on Twitter for insulting the first three movies. Says he's a total Star Wars fan. Apparently has zero taste. Just unbelievable. All right. We got to move on to other topics. We may get back to Star Wars. I don't know. I'm willing to take your calls on it. I am. I can feel Charlie's eyes rolling. My friends, there is a phenomenon out there. You've heard of helicopter parenting, the parents who hover over their children at all times, day or night. Well, there's now something called free-range parenting and free-range kids. Now, for almost everyone listening, that's called growing up. This free range business. It means letting kids be kids, letting kids go outside and play, letting kids go into the woods, letting kids get together with other kids and play ball in the cul-de-sac, letting kids walk down the street to buy a Coke, letting kids be in the park. But in Montgomery County, Maryland, and you and I know there are parts of Georgia in the metro area where this would happen. They are rounding up kids with no parent. They are rounding up kids. There were kids the other day. The Medivs are a family. There were two children walking down a street alone, and someone called the police because the kids were walking without a parent, and the police rounded them up. The other day it happened again. They were rounded up. Their ages are 10 and 6. The parents allow their children to go out and play. They were in a park near their home. The 10-year-old holding the 6-year-old's hand, leading them to the park a mile from the house. And Child Protective Services took the children at 5 p.m. and did not return them to their parents until 10:30 p.m. that night. They didn't learn about the children's whereabouts until after 8 p.m. Now, here's my reaction to this, just so you know. I'm a bit squeamish about letting my kids go a mile away from home by themselves, 10 and 6. That seems a little excessive to me. But the fact is that child kidnappings are actually pretty small. Child kidnappings actually aren't that common. Megan McArdle has a post on this at Bloomberg News where she points out that there's more talk in the media about kidnappings than actually happens. But it's not just children walking a mile away from home. There was the story about the poor lady in South Carolina who worked at a McDonald's, and she left her children in the park right across from the McDonald's to play while she worked her shift. And they were rounded up, and she was charged with reckless endangerment of her children. At some point, you've got to let kids play. You've got to let kids explore. I'm much more down with this whole free range business than I am the helicopter parenting. I don't get the hovering over your kids at all times. That just seems insane to me. Why would you want to do that? But this is a crazy thing about society. Now, I got to step out. There are some other points I want to make on this. But first, Doug Turnbull is checking traffic. And Doug, I'm checking the radar. And we do have that great big blob. That's the technical term. Blob of rain moving in from Alabama.
I've actually been checking WSB jam cams in Douglasville. It's not quite there yet. It looks like the interstate's just wet, but it's not raining for now. And it has been trouble out there, 20 West of Highway 5. Hey, I want to say, when you're talking about free range parenting, I thought you were going to talk about the Naked Twister story.
No!
I'm glad you kept your hands off that. No pun intended. 614 WSB and 285 is still a mess there. It's very close range delays right in front of you. We have trouble move to the right at South Cobb. You're jammed back to Hollowell. More slow stuff. Paces Ferry to 75. East and southbound from Roswell Road all the way around past 78 at DeKalb County. Still outer loop backups poured on 285 west and south for Peachtree Industrial and Doraville around I-20 on the west side. Some delays 285 east still scattered between Flat Shoals and I-20 on the southeast outer loop. Eric?
Seriously, folks, here's the thing. My parents, so now I grew up in different situation than pretty much every single person listening right now. I grew up in Dubai, and we lived in a very safe, well, we didn't live in a gated community at all. We lived out in the middle of the city, but it was a subdivision of sorts of American families. Our school was the equivalent of about two blocks away. We walked to school every morning unless it was pouring down rain, which during the wintertime actually was a lot. And we would stay out all night long if it wasn't a school night. I mean, my parents, I didn't even have to check in. Me and my friends in the neighborhood, we would be out at all hours of the day and night playing. Then we would go home. I mean, we were perfectly safe. Now, here, we would check in. And, like, our kids, we're going through the conversation right now with, do we need to give them some messaging device so that they can text us and stay in touch with us. No, no, no. They're 9 and 6. We're not doing that. Their friends do. No cell phones in our house yet for the kids. Not gonna happen. Caleb on Twitter just tweeted to me, I work for University Housing. Try having helicopter parents that call about a broken toilet for their 22-year-old. Really? I can see that. I used to work for Student Housing at Mercer. Yes, the parents would call to solve the problems for the kids, the helicopter parents, the least independent kids, the least creative kids. I mean, you gotta let your kids go outside and explore the world and get scraped up. You do. They learn from the scrapes. But you know, there's something else going on here as well. And I went to lunch today with a buddy of mine, one of the pastors at our church. We were having this conversation about the lack of community out there, particularly in churches, by the way. That was our perspective for lunch today, was inside churches, trying to get people to have a sense of community. But do you know your neighbors? Do you want to know your neighbors? Do you know your neighbors so that if your kids are outside, they may recognize the kids? I mean, we have lost in this country, and this isn't partisan at all. It's just the way things have become across the way. ANA, the Japanese airline, they're painting one of their 787s to look like R2-D2. I'm sorry, folks. I'm having a moment here. I got to figure out where that jet flies so I can fly on it. Having a moment. Sorry. Anyway, I mean, we've just lost investment in community. We've lost investment in knowing who our neighbors are. We live in a great neighborhood, and all the kids in the neighborhood play together. We know the families around us. They watch our stuff. We watch their stuff. We pay attention at night, neighborhood watch style. The kids are out in the woods playing. They're at each other's house playing. On a day like today where it's been raining so much, they've been playing Minecraft. Blech. But there's an investment in community that I think a lot of people don't have, and I think we need to get back to it. And frankly, I mean, from a faith perspective, given what's coming in this country and elsewhere, I think churches need to spend a little more time, preachers in the pulpit, talking about building communities within the church. You build strong faith by seeing it in each other. You build relationships. You witness to each other in politics, in life, in scripture, by building friendships and relationships. That's the best way to do it. And not a lot of people do. And so it leads to a situation like this where no one recognizes the kids because none of the people in the neighborhood know each other. They don't recognize the kids. They can't say, oh, that's so-and-so's kid. Let me call them and let them know and make sure they know the kid is out. So they call the police instead and burden the police with the job of parenting. Community matters. I'd encourage you all to get to know your neighbors, get to know the people in your church, and not just spend time with your little league team on a little league day, but have people over. Share a meal. Breaking bread together. It's an important life skill not enough people do. Welcome back. Eric Erickson here. Let's take some phone calls. We got a lot of people who want to talk about this subject. Jim in Holly Springs, you're up first. Welcome to the program. Oh, Jim, hang on a second. The slider issue again. All right, Jim, how are you?
All right. Hey, I wanted to first say we got a Mercer connection. I got a son that's a freshman down there in engineering.
Oh, excellent.
Hey, Rock, my question for you was, why do the cops, when they get a call about, hey, there's some kids walking without a parent, why do they feel the need to go and take some kind of action? Why can't they say, so? Are the kids in danger? The kids lost? Maybe go by, ask the kids, hey, where are you going?
Right.
Okay, going to the playground. Fine, let's go.
You know, that would be my thought, but this is Montgomery County, Maryland, where you got a bunch of liberals in charge.
Yeah. Well, see, the same thing happens. I've seen video after video of, like, guys carrying a gun open carrying.
Right.
And the cops, 15 of them, show up and surround the guy. Ask the caller, is he pointing at anybody? Is he threatening? No. you know that's legal, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's the nanny staters. They just can't leave people alone. You know, this was my problem with the new California law, where you can turn in your neighbor because you disagree with them. Over, you think they're using too much water, more water than they should, putting their judgment ahead of others. It's just, it's nanny statism. It just drives me up the wall.
Yeah, nobody is responsible for their own self anymore. And
right.
When you try to be, some people, you know, don't want you to be.
Everybody wants you taken from Uncle Sam's man boob. Jim, I got to let you go there. We'll be back with more phone calls on this topic. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Welcome back. We've been discussing nanny staters and the free-range children, which is just letting your kids go play outside without hovering over them the whole time. That's the one that just gets me, folks. Welcome back, by the way. It is Eric Erickson here. It's the parents who hover over their kids at all times. I don't have enough time to do that. I don't want to do that. I want my kids to go out and play outside and have a sense of daring. I don't get it. Okay, let's go to the phones. Lisa in Buford, you're up next. Welcome.
Hi, this is Eric. This is Lisa.
Hi there.
I want to talk to you. Hi. I have to tell you the most amazing thing. My boys went to middle school, Gwinnett County, twin boys. Well, first week of school, I received a letter from the PE teacher with a log attached that if they exercised for 30 minutes a night during commercials, they would pass PE.
You're kidding.
I wish I was. I wrote back a very well-written but scathing letter stating that based on those rules, my boys would fail PE because they did not spend enough time watching TV to do that.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I was floored by it. I was blessed. We lived in a neighborhood that was surrounded by protected wetlands, and the boys knew there were two streets they could not go past. But Saturday and Sunday mornings, they got done with their chores, and they disappeared, and they had to be in by the time the street lights were on, or they got hungry, and they just went. And there was a little creek to play in and woods to hike in, and they would come back. There were outfits that got thrown in the garbage because they were so filthy dirty. But I could not believe that Gwinnett County Schools sent out a letter that exercise during commercials.
Wow. So, goodness gracious. Lisa, thanks for that. Wow. That's one of the funniest things I've heard in a while. All right. Now you're on line three, which has promptly eaten your name, so you have to tell me your name.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, I'm Jessica.
Jessica, so our Clark Howard purchase phone system from Goodwill occasionally eats people's names when it gets put in. So thank you for telling me your name.
My pleasure. No, I was just chiming in. I think it's ridiculous the way that government, the way that people react now. I have a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, and it's not free range. They have to check in with me, but they do what they want.
Yeah, you know, and your kids are the same age as this family's kids, and your oldest is probably a half year older than mine, but yeah, it's let them go outside and play.
I have dinner waiting on me when I get home. I have salmon, yellow rice, and broccoli waiting on me. She cooked it.
Wow.
You know, my kids do their chores. They're responsible. They set goals. They don't need me there 24/7. They need me to guide them to become adults.
Right.
They don't need me to, you know what I mean? And it's like, I get frustrated. I know some of my neighbors. They know my kids. They have to become functioning adults. And if I sit there and put them in a bubble, I end up with the people I work with who can't figure out how to run a fax.
Yes, thank you. Yes. Yeah, the people who you've got to help them every step of the way.
They think critically. If you had a conversation with my 10-year-old, you would think you were speaking to me.
Mm-hmm.
It drives me insane. I saw that story and I said to myself, what is this? And the government reaches so far into our lives, and people allow it, and they don't do anything to stop it. I remember a time I had CPS get involved with me. My daughter was 3 months old, and she's biracial. And I didn't know that I had to run around telling everybody that she was mixed. Well, when a child is mixed African-American, they're born with something called a Mongolian spot, and hers was on her rear end. So one of the teachers had seen this when they changed her, and it looked like a handprint.
Oh, my
goodness.
So they
called DFACS on me. And when the DFACS worker showed up and saw that their father was black, she turned around and, but it was just, you know, that's a waste of taxpayers'
money. Yes. Yes, it is. It totally is. And we've designed a system where basically kids need to be wrapped in bubble wrap just to be let out of the house these days, which is just insane. Jessica, thanks very much for the phone call. Doug Turnbull, checking traffic back on 285.
Indeed. I guess either way, consider my profession, I'm destined to be a helicopter parent.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, 643 WSB. That's too bad. Unfortunately, 285, I wish we had the helicopter over it to tell you, just to show you the delays right now, but there's still there, 285 northbound between Paces Ferry and the Interloop and I-75. More delays scattered eastbound, really pretty much solid for 400 over to 85 Spaghetti Junction and southbound down to Shambly Tucker. You also have outer loop delays, 285 westbound, heavy as 400 to Roswell Road. Slow spots over to 75 southbound, still on and off the brakes down past I-20. A crash reported 285 southbound at MLK. And that band of showers coming in from Alabama looks to have gotten out of Douglasville. Headlights on, Eric.
Thank you, sir. Frank calling from Stone Mountain. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Eric, my main man.
How are you?
Long time since I called you last time, but you know I'm a long time listener.
Well, I appreciate
it. And a long time contributor. And basically, I think we all grew up as free range children because it was a different time and day back in the day when we grew up where you actually spoke. We had like neighbors.
Right.
It wasn't a neighborhood watch. We had neighbors. We had neighbors that would actually look across the street to make sure that, you know, when strange cars pulled up, they would call you, you know, you'd actually tell your neighbors before you left to let them know that, hey, I'm going out of town this weekend. And if anything happens, you can reach me at this number, at this particular location, and then that way you'd be able to get in contact with me. Your neighbors actually peeked out of the window, sort of like Mrs. Kravitz off of
right.
the Overwitched sitcom. So that way they would actually know who would be cool and who would not be cool. So, I mean, as far as that goes, I understand exactly what you're saying, and I agree with you 100%. Our cul-de-sac actually does not have a neighborhood watch. We have our own person watch. So we do, like, cookouts where, you know, every other weekend, another person inside of the cul-de-sac will actually determine who is actually going to generate the cookout and make sure that we're straight on that. So that way we can actually generate a family and a, you know, community-oriented piece to make sure that we were all good in that neighborhood. So everyone knew who everyone was. And then that way it would make a sense of community to make sure that everybody was put in place. I think that's what's currently missing from that. The same thing with these kids. Now, I grew up in the west side of Savannah. And when I grew up in the west side of Savannah, the homicide rate in Savannah was like maybe 83 people per capita at that particular point. So, I mean, you can actually look up the rates for Savannah homicide rate during the time that I grew up. And my mother gave me, at that point, she gave me $1.50 in quarters. Because we did not have cell phone technology at it.
Uh-huh.
So that way, she actually gave me that number to let me know, regardless of where I was, I would call her and let her know where I was. So if I was going out to a friend of mine's house and I'd have to spend some time there.
You got
to
check in.
Call her. Yeah, I'd have to check in.
Yeah.
I'd have to check in. And that's the thing that we're currently missing right now. I don't think
well, you know, I do have to say there are plenty of cases, and Frank, I got to let you go there. Appreciate the phone call. There are plenty of cases of irresponsible parents out there. But there are vastly many more cases of parents just letting their kids be kids, and the ninnies and the nannies out there just don't want them to do it. It's just, you know, leave people alone. Hey folks, don't forget, next Thursday, we're going to Five Seasons over on the west side to celebrate Hunter Hill, the beer legislation, and have a couple. We'll be broadcasting live. The public is welcome. Ryan and Flowery Branch, you are the last caller tonight. How are you?
I'm great, Eric. Thanks for taking my call. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thank you.
We have a, up here in Flowery Branch, I have a conservative household. We don't want our kids to be latchkey kids, but we, at the same time, we don't want them not to go outside and play. So I'm like you. I'm not going to give my kid a cell phone at 8 years old. That's way too much evil that he would have access to. So we compromised, and we bought those little mini Cobra two-way radios. And he's allowed to go out as far as that radio will take him, which is about 2 miles. If he doesn't answer that radio, then he's in for a whooping.
Oh, that's a good idea. I was just looking during commercial break at the little Motorola ones.
Yeah, and they got about a 2-2.5 mile range, and it's got a little alert on it, so when you hit the call button, it rings until he answers it. And if he doesn't answer it, then either he's ignoring it or he's out of range, and then he's in trouble.
Nice. That's a good idea. I'm going to look on Amazon for those because I want something for my kids. Because every once in a while, you do have to call them, and you don't want to yell through the neighborhood for them. That's a good idea. Ryan, thanks very much for that. That's good parenting. All right, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. I want to have a little bit of a deeper conversation with you guys tomorrow on some topics. So stick around. It'll be good. We'll make it a free-for-all Friday as well. Have a great, great night. Enjoy the rain that's coming our way. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson, special podcast interview here today. So as Hillary Clinton's campaign gets up and running, we're hearing more and more and reminded more and more about both Benghazi and the administration's failure to deal with it. And one guy who knows what happened there is Chris Peranto, who was on the ground there and helped co-write a book, 13 Hours, the inside account of what really happened in Benghazi. And Chris is joining me now here on WSB. Chris, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it, and hope I can shed a little more light on what happened there that night and get some more information.
Well, you know, so you and I, we followed each other on Twitter for a while. I remember right after you guys went on Megyn Kelly's show, and just everybody involved viciously attacked by the administration, you guys in particular, and then, you know, you had the situation very similar to it with the Bo Bergdahl situation, where his guys go on Fox News and they're attacked by the administration. They never seem to want to deal with what has happened and cover up. But here with Benghazi, you were actually on the ground and they weren't.
Yeah, and they've got to protect agendas. They've got to protect their names. They've got to protect their stories. So of course they're going to try to slam us or misrepresent us or slander us, however you want to say it. And because we don't fit with their narrative, and we're not going to. I don't know why Bergdahl's team have not continued to speak out. We are going to continue to speak out and continue to keep putting out the true narrative, whether they like it or not. They can come, and as you can see, they have continually have inconsistencies with their stories. Our stories stay consistent. So I think that legitimizes, well, I don't think it does legitimize what we're saying, and it delegitimizes what they're saying.
Well, you know, so there was the Senate Benghazi report that the Democrats put out several months ago, and the media took that as gospel truth, even though it contradicted earlier claims. I know others have weighed in with you on this, but I'm interested to hear your take on what the Senate report said.
Well, you know, the Mike Rogers report was essentially a whitewash, and myself and John, Tig Tygan, one of my other buddies that was on the ground that night, we did write a very, very good, in-depth article pointing out all the mistakes throughout the report, all the deficiencies in it, and it was published. People, all they got to do is search my name and John Tygan and search Mike Rogers, put all our names together, and the report will come up. But essentially, you know, Mike Rogers had some interest in what was going on in Benghazi and interest in the State Department due to his wife working and bidding on $10 billion worth of State Department contracts at the time. So he had to play a little bit of ball. He had different conflicts of interest. But essentially, it was looking at it and looking back now, they didn't interview the people they needed to. They took the people, again, they took the people's words that were not there over ours, and they wrote a report that was, well, honestly, it was extremely general, extremely vague, and it it didn't clarify anything that went on that night. And also, there were spots where it actually, and this is from General West, even Lynn Westmoreland, that was, you know, from the state of Georgia there, where they came out and said that we didn't say there was a stand down, and they also came out and said that we did not say that we would have saved their lives if we wouldn't have been told to stand down. So this was a complete farce. Really terrible report.
Well, let's get into the stand down, because, you know, the New York Times did a review of your book back in September of last year. Yeah. David Kirkpatrick did. I thought it was, for the New York Times, pretty reasonable, and notes in there your discussion of the stand down order, and that the agency's base chief in Benghazi was the person who told you guys to stand down.
Well, that was who told us face to face, and us guys on the ground, or I think any military personnel, especially any operator or so forth, we're not going to put out a conspiracy theory of how high it went up. We're not going to be skeptical within within us saying what happened and what didn't happen that night. All we could do, and we wanted to make sure the book was correct and was as verifiable as it could be, we were just going to say, hey, who told us directly? What was the chief of base? And that's why we kept it that way. We didn't go up the chain and say, well, it came from the administration, it came from Hillary, it came from Leon Panetta, it came from specifically David Petraeus, because he didn't give us the order directly. I mean, granted, Bob, our chief of base, Bob, is the one that knows. We just wanted to make sure that it was factual. And the only way we could be factual is saying, hey, this is what we saw, this is who talked to us, it's black and white, and leave it at that.
So tell the listeners what actually happened on the ground that night. There have been so many stories over time, and it all seems to blur together.
Sure. I don't give you for lack of having 3 hours to tell you about the story and so forth, I'll give you a pretty good general picture. Bottom line is we were getting ready to go due to an attack about 9:32 in the evening time, and at that time, we were get our gear ready. We were ready within 5 minutes to get out the gate and start trying to assist the consulate personnel, which were approximately a mile away from where we were. We were at the annex, and we were basically told to wait, stand down, and wait again. Those were the exact words that were used for approximately 25 minutes. Finally, we had to disregard orders and leave on our own. And this is something the media, especially the mainstream media, doesn't pick up on. They have come and said, hey, yeah, these guys were delayed 25 minutes. Well, that delay turned into about 50 minutes because we had to actually fight our way on foot onto the objective. And that seems to be lost somewhere, and I don't know why. But by the time we actually got on the conflict ground, it had been close to 50 minutes, and the ambassador and Sean Smith had already expired, had already died. We ended up fighting on the consulate. So about midnight, we did find Sean Smith's body. We were unable to find Ambassador Stevens' body, and that still hurts me, because we had to actually leave the consulate at midnight due to getting a counterattack, and also State Department guys, Scott Wicklund, Alex Henderson, and Dave Ubin, had since left the consulate, and they actually got attacked or ambushed on the way back to our annex. So we had to get back to our annex to defend that, and we ended up with going into 3 more firefights from basically midnight on till 5 in the morning, and one included mortars, mortar 81 millimeter mortars, and we lost Ty and Glenn Doherty due to a direct hit with those mortars, which were extremely, extremely accurate. And eventually we got out of there. The final lift, we got out at about 10:30 the following day, and that was with Libyan aircraft. At no time did we have a U.S. aircraft come to assist us with air support or come get us out of Benghazi. We had to actually commandeer or rent Libyan aircraft to get out of there. And that was the next day. So it's actually 13 hours from start to finish. That's why the book's called 13 Hours.
Wow. You know, yeah, one of the things that I hear Democrats say, particularly because you guys have been vocal and have continued to talk about this issue, and it's like they think that you must have an ulterior motive for telling the story and keeping the story alive, that you're just out there to use it against Hillary Clinton, as opposed to just letting people know what actually happened. There seems to be such an intentional fog put over it by people who just don't want the facts out there.
Well, it's easier for the supporters of Hillary Clinton to say that, and I can guarantee you probably 99% of them haven't read the book or actually know exactly what took place in Benghazi. They've only read what the ARB said or the review board of reports said. So, if they want to keep doing that, the only thing we can keep doing is going out and speaking to the public and continue to get the word out, because it really it has nothing to do with the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. It has to do with failure of leadership, and that's what happened that night. And she was in charge of the State Department, and she allowed, whether she knew about it or not, her watch, a very good man and a very high-ranking ambassador, died that night due to inability of leadership or the inability of a leader to take charge and do the right thing. And whether that's due to incompetence or, you know, there's conspiracy theories out there that it may have been purposeful that they did not send us support or try to assist the ambassador, it makes no difference. It was complete failure of leadership at the State Department level and even quite possibly at the CIA level and the administration level. But the onus falls on the State Department because it was a State Department op, and they had the responsibility to protect the ambassador. We just happened to be in the right place at the right time to attempt to save the ambassador and the State Department guys. But again, if we hadn't been there, I believe you'd probably been cleaning up 30 bodies instead of just two.
So what are you doing now? You and I are both at the Premier Speakers Bureau for speaking.
Yeah,
you're now listed there as the former Ranger. You're on the book tour for 13 hours. Well, what do you spend your time doing now that you're not overseas?
You know what? I do speak a lot. A lot of speaking events. In fact, I'm heading to Montana to do a 2-day speaking event, and then heading to Dallas to do another one. A lot of it, of course, people want to hear the story because it is the election time. They want to know. And again, I don't go and speak and say anti-Hillary. That's not what I do. I go on there, it's more motivational and the leadership and how political correctness can kill, literally. But a lot of it, too, we've got the movie coming out, so we have to consult on it. But I'll be honest, the majority of it is speaking. Is speaking. I speak about 6 or 7 times a month, and as you know, that encompasses travel too. So that can easily encompass 3 weeks out of the month.
I'm pretty anti-travel these days. I feel like I'm always on an airplane, and you do more than me.
it needs to be done. You know, CBS, NBC, ABC, they're not going to speak about this. And so the only way for me to get out there and tell what's going on is to actually speak to people directly. And if that means traveling everywhere, it needs to be done, and I'm willing to sacrifice that. It's hard on my family because my family figured I'd be done and be home, but it's a necessity. I can't see Ms. Clinton becoming president because I've already seen the failures throughout the years on the State Department level, not just Benghazi, but you know our failure with losing a lot of our allies from Israel. UK and not getting in and having, you know, the Muslims and Islamists, I should say Muslims, but Islamists coming to power all on her watch. And the truth just needs to get out there to show people that she lacks a lot of integrity and just leadership in general. She hasn't done a very good job. And my story is just a small microcosm of it. But it's what I have, the platform I have, so I'm willing to be out there and talk about it.
Well, good for you. Look, keep up the good work and blessings on your travels, and get home to your family some.
I'm trying. Hey, and thank you guys as well, and your network, radio network. You guys do a fantastic job, and I hope I get to talk to you guys again. Really do. I really am honored to be on the radio show. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Chris Peronto, thanks very much.
Thanks, sir.